The Business Simplicity Podcast, where leaders share their most successful strategies and the failures that inspired them, so business owners and managers can avoid the suffering and reap the benefits. With your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker coming back after the holiday season. And I am really looking forward to this conversation with Jeff Kumps, who is the author of Sociocracy 3.0. He's one of the founders of iLean, and that's one of the top, say, agile advisory groups in Belgium and surrounding countries, I think. It's quite famous over here. And he's passionate about a lot of these next generation organizational design approaches. And we're hoping to just have an open conversation about what this can mean. And I'm really, really fascinated as I've been working and sometimes suffering in what we would call maybe traditional organizations. And so I'm just super, super eager to learn. So Jeff, thank you so much for joining. Can you kick us off with maybe just a little summary about what is it that you do?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Chris. Glad to be here. What is it that I do professionally then, I guess you mean? I help organizations.
Yeah. I leave it very open, so you can go wherever you want with that. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. In general, I'm helping organizations of any kind, and mostly the leaders in those organizations, to create workplaces that are both more effective, so that the right things are done in the company, that the results are being met, but being effective at the same time with being a humane workplace that nourishes people, in which people can thrive. So we end up with win-win situations, that it's a great place to work, and at the same time, they're doing great stuff for the world. So I think that's the summary of what I do. And the way I'm helping organizations with that is typically by training and coaching around self-organization and how to govern organizations in equivalence.
Hmm. What do you mean by equivalence? Is that like something different than equality?
Yeah. For me, those are two very different things. When we want to be equal in an organization, then we would have to have the same responsibilities or wear the same uniforms or get the same salary. And that's not what I'm talking about. So it's not the egalitarian, we all need to be the same and do everything together kind of culture, but more how can we listen to all the voices in an organizations or in an organization, that people can have different sets of responsibility, different tasks, different work, also different levels of engagement in a way. But still, we listen to people, for instance, objecting to certain decisions, or we get people together to be informed when we take big strategic decisions. So that's what I mean with equivalence, that we treat each other as equal human beings with a possible equal contribution, in a sense.
Mm. Feels good. I guess that could also feel scary to some people, but before we get into the meat of it, I'd like to have a follow-up question of why this for you? Like what is it that drives Jeff to put his life energy in this?
It makes sense to jump back in time to where it all started for me, and that's when I graduated from school and I ended up in my very first job as a programmer in a so-called Scrum team. We didn't call it Scrum at that point in time. I don't even think we knew the word Scrum, but we were using those kind of agile techniques, small team, self-organizing, great atmosphere, short feedback loops with the customer. And I was really enjoying work. It was great. I had friends. We were doing great stuff and having fun. But then like 1 or 2 years or 3 or 4, maybe even years later, I became a consultant and I ended up in a, let's say, more normal or typical large company as a consultant. And it's only then I realized that the average workplace wasn't as nourishing and as effective as this first job I had. And at the same point in time, I was getting more and more interested in how do people collaborate. I was having more focus on how people were working than on the code we were writing, let's say. So I was into project management and coaching. And so around that point in time, I at first unconsciously, I guess, decided like, I want to create workplaces like the first one I was able to land into and bring that kind of atmosphere, collaboration and effectiveness more to the workplace. Because it's not only a lot of fun to work in that place, but it's also nourishing. You can grow as a collaborator, and we were delivering great stuff to customers. So I guess that's the why to make more meaningful workplaces, because that's where we spend 7 or 8 hours a day at least.
And nourishing and growth. I'm going to put on my Newtonian management science hat and say the workplace is not here to nourish you. Do your job. I'm all with you with nourishment and growth, but what do you mean by that? Like at the human level, what does nourishing and growth enabling mean?
Yeah, well, it's big words. I understand, but it is about not that an employer needs to take the full responsibility for the personal growth and development of their employees. No, that's not what I mean, but that when we're in a workplace, we're collaborating, that we can, as much as possible, be ourselves and not having to wear masks, so that we can be authentic and that we also can learn new things, but also learn to become a better human being just by collaborating. I think that's the big invitation in any relationship, whether it's personal or professional. The big invitation in every relationship is to grow as a human being and become more of yourself, or learn about yourself. So I'm dreaming of workplaces that are mirroring us, motivating us, helping us to learn more about ourselves, to become better people, to become better not only in the skills we have professionally, like I want to become a better journalist or programmer or worker or whatever I'm doing, but also become better in relationships, in more awareness about my own behavior and patterns behind that behavior, so that I can engage more meaningful with the world in general. That's what I think I mean. Yeah. And that includes taking more responsibility for my own behavior.
Yeah, there is an ownership there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it's not about employers having to parent their employees, but giving them a safe space to work and deliver on one hand, but also learn more about themselves and working together with other people. Yeah.
Yeah. Something that's been evolving in my mind the last couple of years is, and it's still an open question, but could it be that the reason for companies to exist beyond profit and maybe beyond creating some impact with their customers, but is actually to create the space for people to grow. And I mean by that is, if you want your company to improve in its efficiency and effectiveness, I believe by definition that's based on the improvement in the growth of the people, both at the individual level and the collective. And then the measure of that growth is actually the quality of the communication. Does that make sense to you? Or I don't know. I throw it out every once in a while and sometimes I get funny faces and sometimes people laugh and smile, but I don't know. What do you think?
No, I wouldn't be laughing with that. No, I would agree with all of that. Yeah, because profit should be a result of, on one hand, having a positive impact on the world, and on the other hand, creating that nourishing and effective workplace for people. Yeah definitely. Yeah.
So, my own journey into this space, and you started as a programmer. My journey into the world of software started in accounting, so not a computer scientist. And I've had to learn a lot. And pretty early in my career, I was the CIO of a multinational financial services company. And it was like the mid-2000s. And I started hearing about the Scrum Agile stuff. And I was curious, but we didn't really have the need or, you know, the problem to solve there. So I was watching a little bit, and it wasn't until later, with a company called PowerPeers that we had to refactor a whole application stack fast, and decided to really just lean into this Agile and Scrum because we had to basically do it within a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I had to put my, you know, as the CTO at that time, I had to put my doubts aside. And just and what the agile coach at the time said is, you know, let's just play the game to learn the rules.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
All right.
Challenging.
It's scary. You know, yeah. Because like what? And you started because you know, in your career, you saw it, you felt it, you tasted it. So I guess my question is, how can people start to see this if they've never seen it before? Like because of course you have your book, Sociocracy 3.0, and then there's a Sociocracy sort of practical guide that I think we can, it's a Creative Commons open source sort of framework that people can read it, but you're not going to really be able to taste it. So how can people step into this concept?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think first we need to differ between the Scrum and Agile movement and Sociocracy, but also why both, let's call them movements, because they go beyond methods or tools, exist in the first place. Because I think that we then need to mention complexity. Complexity in the sense of the word that things are not always predictable. And if we need to build a physical machine, then we can build the perfect plan, have the plan drafted or crafted by experts, and then order all the parts, put them together, and the machine will work. But when building software or working with people and in many kinds of projects and organizations, things are not that predictable, and they become complex instead of complicated. And so by realizing that you're never going to be able to predict all details in such projects, you could be able to also realize that you need a process that in itself is adaptive. And I think that's the big difference what Scrum and Agile has brought to the world of product development, to realize we should have a process that is adaptive in itself, that is regulating itself by constantly looking for feedback and working on an empirical way. And I think by having that started in the 90s and grow in the world of software, but also expand and get also into other domains and sectors, that the world now starts realizing that running an organization is also more complex than it is complicated, in the sense that it's not a machine you can predict. You cannot predict what your startup or your larger company is exactly going to need in 6 months, or what service or what problems or challenges are going to surface. So by also looking at the governance of an organization as something you need to empirically do and build in short feedback loops, I think that in a cognitive way, realizing this is already a good start and an important step, and probably not enough, because you also need to experience and gain trust in how does that work then. So that's why I like your story. You were invited to jump in, you did jump in, and then you learned by doing. So ways that sometimes help people to gain trust is do small projects first in this way, or run some simulations. Some people need a lot of explaining and want to cognitively understand everything. Others need to jump in. So I guess that's kind of individual of how can you make sure it's less scary, because it is scary, because you don't exactly know. It's kind of letting go of some sort or kind of control to, in the end, gain more control, because you can continuously adapt and reach your goals more effectively.
I wonder if the control that people let go is a fantasy anyways. Like, are you really in control now? Maybe you have metrics and structures and meetings that give you the sensation of control, but...
So, what does that mean, being in control, actually?
Yeah. What is it? And almost, would you want your company to be in control? I mean, I guess there's a balance there that if it's controlled, mm-hmm. then it's almost mm-hmm. contained. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking for innovation, then containing isn't mostly, you know, the most innovative environment. Can you outline what is sociocracy? Can you give us sort of the baby description for people that might not be familiar with the concept?
Yeah, sure. Sociocracy, which originates from the 1970s, is both a mindset, in my opinion, and a set of tools and techniques to govern collaborations or organizations in more equivalence. And then the meaning of equivalence, as we mentioned earlier, so having people collaborate more effectively while hearing all voices without having the need for power hierarchies. So we still have hierarchy in organization, but the hierarchy is going to be more about goals that need to be met or certain needs that need to be fulfilled, and less about people identifying with power positions. So people are going to move more freely through organizations to the groups, which in sociocracy terms would be called circles. You could consider those small self-organizing teams. So people can take roles or become part of circles or teams, thus, in which they can contribute most at that point in time. So they move more freely through the organization, and teams learn to not only focus on the work and executing the work in an efficient and effective way, but also spend time on governing themselves. So you distribute authority and governance as local as needed, not necessarily as local as possible, but as local as needed, so that people can govern themselves and take the decisions for their own work and collaboration as needed. I think that would be a very short summary.
And listening to it, it could sound very gooey, meaning that people are running around and self-organizing and mm-hmm. And my feeling, again, not being an expert and not even really have existed in such an organization, my understanding is there is actually a discipline to this, meaning there's a structure. Can you maybe satisfy some of the those cognitive needed people to like, okay, well, how is this not a free for all, just a chaotic swarm of people flying around? There are structures and explicit disciplines that are required to make it work.
Yeah, definitely. Let me say a bit in general and then give some examples to make it more concrete. But it also links back to what we were saying about being equal versus working in equivalence. In the sense that an organization has a purpose, a mission, a purpose, a goal, whatever you want to call it. And when I'm part of that organization, I cannot just do whatever I feel like doing this morning or today, right? So we're all here to contribute to that mission. So how that gets form is by creating very clear domains of both work and decision-making in which people step into and they deliver to certain targets. So I cannot just do whatever I want. It's in a way always contributing to a goal that is helping to contribute to the mission of the organization. So that's just one example of how teams get very clear boundaries. It's really important to discuss with a team and agree on boundaries for their work. Typically, the kind of work, the experience and maturity of people is going to allow for more or less freedom. So it's the balance between more autonomy and freedom versus taking up more responsibility and accountability for the course of the organization. And it's a balancing exercise with every team in every situation again. So for me, self-management is not about giving all people all possible freedom in an organization. No, it's finding out what the best balance is between autonomy and freedom and the right boundaries and guidance to deliver the right things for the organization. And also together discovering what those right targets or goals for an organization are.
And you mentioned it's also a mindset. And I'm thinking some organizations like large banks, financial services. And this is going to be a very nasty thing I'm about to say, but I think there's some truth in it, that that there's some people that I think that have made careers out of lack of that clarity. You know, if you have functions in large organizations that we're not really quite sure what their boundaries are or their mission or their contribution, and they exist because some compliance thing, they're very busy, you know, they take this stack of papers and they do their thing and they pass the stack on. And so it, I guess the mindset of the humans involved, they need to celebrate that responsibility. Say, hey, I want to be here and be, I want clarity for myself.
On
what I'm doing. And I want to step into that space. I guess not everyone's open to that. I don't know. Or maybe they don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a learning process and a journey. So to take that large bank as an example, it wouldn't be possible to overnight turn it into a more agile or sociocratic culture and mindset. That's a year-long journey, which, in my opinion, needs to start with the leaders on at the top. So it's their inner world and inner patterns and what they believe that will allow such a culture to step by step emerge and grow. Yeah. And so people will step by step need to learn to take more responsibility to bring in certain tensions or needs in a constructive way, to also give proper feedback. Because if we distribute authority and we give people more freedom, then we need to be able to communicate and collaborate in a much more constructive way, because we're going to have to take harder decisions together as a team instead of our boss taking them for us. We're going to also challenge each other in why are we here? What's the work we're doing? What's the quality of the work? What's the quality of our collaboration? So this is a journey to learn to self-reflect about that, but also to give feedback to each other and receive feedback and learn together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would definitely advise to take those things step by step. Yeah.
So you're busy with this every day. And in our pre-discussion, you seem pretty busy. Like, you know, like you have more than enough work. So that, and it's implying that there's organizations that are certainly definitely, you know, on this journey. And I hear about it more and more, you know, obviously, you know, agile, Scrum, sociocracy, holocracy, these words. Maybe because I'm more in tune to them and maybe I'm seeking them out, that probably has an influence on it. But it seems like there's definitely a shift going on. Maybe this isn't necessary for every organization, because again, what's the problem you're trying to solve? But what do you do with those organizations? So like working with the leadership, let me ask the question differently. What is the perfect type of person in a leadership role that you are just delighted to work with? Like where are they starting from? Where are they going? What do they need?
I think that's very personal, right? But for me, what I would seek in the ideal leader to work with is some kind of eagerness to learn. I don't care about what level of agility they already have, but I do care about, are they willing to also look at themselves as a person, a human being, and the way they lead an organization? And are they willing to start there? What I wouldn't like, to give the counterexample, is a manager that says, come and work with my team, but leave me alone. Change the culture within my team, but don't touch me and my way of managing them. Because that's, I don't believe that that's ever going to work. So I like leaders or customers that are eager to learn, that have a clear view on what is it we want to do with the organization, what are the current challenges, and how can I and we together become more effective.
Yeah, sometimes that, I'm curious what your distribution curve would be, but sometimes when I think about the people I just like to work with, there's, you know, this normal distribution curve, that there's some people who are just switched on, hungry, curious, eating everything. They're figured out on their own. Actually, they don't even need me. You know, they're ahead of me. You guys, you're doing it. You're practicing it. You're just in, you know, and it doesn't matter the model either for me, you know, whether it's a command and control sort of siloed pyramidal model or a circle based, you know, sociocracy type model. My belief is that if people are coming at it with the right intention and the right curiosity, and both can work. So those people are out there, they're doing their thing. And then there's the other tail, which are so rigid in their confidence that they know the answer and they're going to tell everyone the answer. And there's just no space. I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to work with them either because no, they don't need me. They don't need me. So there's this space in the middle where people that are aware that what they're doing isn't fitting the challenge of today.
Correct. Yeah.
And maybe have snacked a little bit here and there. And they're like, okay, well, what do we do? You know, how do we get there? And if and what is some structure to make that happen? So where would you start? Like if you have an organization that has maybe been dabbling with some agile and has some scrum in the basement you know, they're trying to make this shift as an organization. The CEO, for example, says, "Hey Jeff, I'm expecting to be here for the next 5 to 10 years, and I want to make I want to make this happen." You know, like where do you start with that? Like is that like a walk in the forest, or is that a read the book, where do you start?
Well, I think I would first try to get to know and feel what the point of view and the attitude of this leader is, the one who's in charge of the change, let's say, or the group that's in charge. And whether or not they would want to go first and role model the future culture. I think that's something I would always try to assess in one or another way at first. That could be happening in a first intake conversation or a walk we do together or some first workshops, because sometimes I find that a good and practical introduction to go into a team and discover together what are the current challenges in this team, what are the difficult things you're struggling with, or what are decisions you need to take that are hard. And by just being able to facilitate one of their management meetings and help them tackle some tough problems, you can feel into a group and feel whether or not they are up for the challenge, who's more up to it, what some typical patterns and struggles will be. And then I could be the mirror saying like, hey, you say you want to go there, but I see this behavior, what's happening? So I think it's both conversations, but I also like to get things going in practice. Just a few small experiments to get going. What I sometimes refuse is when people would ask me like, hey, we're a 500 people company, can you come in and train all 500 of us in sociocracy or whatever? Then I would definitely say no, and that doesn't seem like a good plan. Let's first run some experiments, take it step by step, and of course training is part of the change, but not the very first step and not all at once typically.
All right, I've got a lovely question. And Jeff, feel free to fire back. We've got another 10, 15 minutes. So I've been bombarding you. And so if there's anything on your mind. I was about to say, imagine this case, but it's a very real case, very close to me. That we have some people that are on that other tail around the agile transformation that are asking for a definitive plan, like when will we be agile? You know, so in 14.3 months, we want to have, you know, take the agile, I don't even know how you measure that, but you know, what are we going to need to do to get there? You know, what is the cost to get there? What's the benefit, you know, the ROI of getting there? And so far I've been really avoiding that and basically saying that, you know, we can tell you where we are now and where what the next step could be, but because this is a very human journey, to have a program and a definitive sort of princey, waterfall-y plan, I can guarantee you that won't be it. That won't happen. So how do you ever get that question? What's the plan?
Yeah, sure.
How long is it going to take? You know?
Yeah. Very, very often. And it's also been and still is a learning journey for me to try and answer that question without making way too detailed promises that are never going to be reachable. So years ago, I would refuse to answer the question and say, no, you don't want a plan. But over the years, I've come to understand that there's a real need for some guidance there or some security in a way about what's going to happen. Also, what time is it going to take? Although you can never predict what time a culture change is going to take because it depends on so many things. Yeah. So I need to pay attention to that for myself because my tendency would be to too quickly say, no, we don't need a plan. Let's just go in and see and discover what's happening. As I said, I learned to understand the other side of the story too. So I think it's about discovering what are some big steps we could take or what are possible events that could happen or when are we going to be agile? Well, at first, what does that mean? I cannot predict when you're going to be agile, but for maybe one product you're building, together with a group, investigate and predict how much time will it take us to release 5 times a year instead of just 1 time. That's something you could put some timelines on, but then it's estimates and ambitions, not facts, right? So it's good to plant flags and to set direction and to create ambitious goals and saying, hey, let's try in 2 years to reach this and these things. But the intention should be that it's ambitions and intentions, not facts, you know, in a way. Yeah.
What's on your mind? Where would you like this conversation to go now?
Maybe interesting to find out whatever your experience is with sociocracy, if any, or with self-organizing teams, and see what we can learn from each other there.
Well, honestly, very low. I guess in a formal way. We've been working with some like team topology work in my current organization, which is, I think, somewhat similar to that we've been trying to inspire the different and mostly development and product teams to discover their best form. Mm-hmm. And in parallel, I'm also doing some advisory, some just ongoing coaching with the CTO of a large scale trading company, and they're going through a similar process. I'm able to see it because my hands are in it, and I'm also able to see it through the eyes of another these days.
Okay. Yeah.
What I'm seeing is there is a lot of initial confusion when you ask people to say, okay, well, what team would you belong in, or what would, you know, how would we organize this stuff? Mm-hmm. Some people are like, well, what is my job then? Well, uh-huh. Yeah. What yeah, is your yeah. job then? Like, oh, wait, no, but you're supposed to tell me what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, well, wait, you're the expert, you know? And so you get into these really fascinating conversations. And then we have had in my organization, some lovely stuff that actually different teams have split and merged and it's been basically on their own, obviously in consultation with still some traditional, you know, managers running around. Uh-huh. And then the role of, and this isn't sociocracy stuff, this is more agile and scrum stuff, but the roles of scrum masters and product owners are evolving. So what I've been doing is really training scrum masters and product owners because my dream would be to maybe have scrum masters that are more experienced external so they can be more coaches of the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if you have internal knowledgeable people and get them trained up on product ownership, and what does that mean? Because mm-hmm. if you don't have a functioning product owner role in Scrum land, the machine won't work. You know, that just, you know, there's a few things that just won't work. And then try to inspire, you know, the different cadences, you know, different scales of the organization. And what I bump up against constantly is lack of leadership engagement and the belief that this is in development and R&D and in the basement, you know, and you're like, well, okay, how are we going to get this flowing from sales to product to development to support? It can't be only in the basement of one. So mostly those are where I'm really, really struggling with. And what I have been trying to inspire in some conversations, in close consultation with our CEO is he seems to really want the people who have decided to join the company at different be somewhat masters of their destiny, and he seems very he doesn't desire to impose rigidly. However, we haven't found a governing communication method to make that happen. And this is why I've been hunting sociocracy, because I'm like, well, maybe if we take that part, something that says, okay, well, how do we govern? How do we have conversations about what the mandate is, and how do you write that down? How can you make it a bit more explicit and be able to have more of a dialogue around that? But that's honestly, it hasn't stuck yet. It hasn't landed.
And also, how do you select people for certain teams or roles then? Obviously, if you don't want to impose, which I appreciate, it's still interesting. How do people get into certain teams or roles? Because if you're always asking for volunteers, you also always step into the same traps of the loudest speaking people go first, or... So that's an interesting topic. And something else that resonated with me when you were talking is the need for Scrum Masters, who are often focusing on the team and the practices too much, to be able to develop and grow into more organizational coaches.
Yeah. Well, if you talk about an agile coach versus a Scrum Master, which I consider are essentially the same thing. One is more, again, in my paradigm, I might be wrong. Scrum Master is looking at one or a few teams and the flow. Yeah. And then if you have an agile coach sort of being that glue, and then maybe that person or a couple of them are looking at the constellation around. But then they need the mandate, and they need the, because if you have a Scrum Master and I oppose a Scrum Master on a team, then the team doesn't have a lot of.
No, that's exactly what I mean.
So, but then the agile coach needs to be invited or mandated or positioned in a way to have that influence.
And I guess that journey can already start as a Scrum Master. If I'm as a Scrum Master every day, again and again, doing things for the team and updating their boards and making sure they get up for the daily stand up and facilitate every single meeting, then if I don't watch out, I'm parenting the teams and have the team become dependent on me as a Scrum Master, maybe unconsciously to make sure I'm important or to make sure my role exists or whatever. So I think that's something the average Scrum Master could be more aware of. How can I grow myself, and how, instead of just working with one team, what would need to change to be able to Scrum Master three teams? Because then I would need to teach the team to take more responsibility for their own process and improvements. And so that's something that triggered me when you were talking, like, how can I grow from a one team Scrum Master to a more team Scrum Master and maybe an agile coach in the end?
And honestly, I when I look for Scrum Masters, I look for people who are really passionate about Scrum Mastery. A lot of them want to be an agile coach. I'm like, well, those are kind of different intentions. I'm curious, and we need to wrap up soon, but I'm curious about, is there a generational issue? Because for this team that is reporting up to me in Cairo, and they're younger, they have product owners, but as far as I know, they don't have formal Scrum Masters, and they're rocking it, mostly out of curiosity, and they're adopting some safety scaly stuff because it makes sense for them, you know, and it's just, you know, they're just out there learning, they're taking their courses, they're eating things on YouTube, occasionally asking our agile coach for some tips and tricks and stuff, but it feels like the younger generation is more naturally inclined to this stuff, and maybe they don't need a parental scrum master as much. Do you see that pattern as well, or is that just an anomaly in Egypt?
Well, I have too few experience with younger generations to say it's a pattern, but I've definitely seen some examples of that. Yeah. So it's not going to be the exception to the rule you're talking about, definitely. But I have too few data to say it's a general trend, but I can imagine, because when I talk to HR people about and a different topic, but hiring younger people, they always say things like, these people are more aware of what they want and need. They demand more meaningfulness from the workplace. They want to take processes and stuff in their own hands early in their career. So that's something I do hear in, but then mainly from HR people responsible for hiring and growing people in organizations. So yeah, I guess those things can be linked together, definitely. And isn't the ideal situation where a team doesn't need a scrum master because they are continuously improving themselves, right?
Eventually, yeah. I'm just surprised with these teams in Cairo that they're already sort of starting there. I'm like, wow, this is unexpected,
great.
But yeah. There's no reason for me to intervene.
No, go for it.
So Jeff Kumps, I'm holding up the book if people are watching on video, Sociocracy 3.0, the novel. And I think we'll it's Creative Commons, so we'll also include the link to the Sociocracy practical guide, which really it's like I think 150 pages PDF of just really in detail. I guess you should read the Jeff's book, which is more of a management novel to get the feeling and experience a little bit, and then if it's something for you, go into the practical guide. And
that's a good approach.
That's how I did it. That's it helped me understand it more. And we'll put the link. So it's Jeff Kumps at linkedin.com. So if people are interested in being inspired and coached and trained and you know, elevated in these topics by Jeff, then please reach out. So Jeff, thank you so much for joining. This has been brilliant.
I liked it. Thanks a lot for having me, Chris.
Thank you for listening. Download the Simplicity Toolkit from ebullience.com to discover the power of the Simplicity Scan and Sprint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.